So this is the Writer's Mastermind, and we're going to help you to get published. And that takes in the full gamut of the research, the writing, how you're going to publish, and then the launching and the marketing. So it's the full gamut. And so we've covered several topics so far. And today our topic is actually how to launch. And we were just chatting about there's an author, actual authors group that meet on Zoom once a month, and they do a critique. And we were just having a conversation about joining that. For those of you that are listening, it is called the Cincinnati Fiction Writers. And you can find them on meetup.com, the Cincinnati Fiction Writers on Meetup. And you can click through on that meetup.com group and find the Zoom code and join tonight. It is 6 or 7, I have to look, Eastern time. So for those of you that are interested in listening in, you do not need to submit something. You do not actually need to be an official member of the group. You can go right to meetup.com. Cincinnati Fiction Writers, click through and listen in tonight. And so I'm going to be listening in because I learned so much. They talk to new writers that are doing submissions. And when I get brave enough, I'll submit something. But anyway, for now, I'm just listening in. And so I love it. And we were talking about the more you do something, the better you become. We started on Clubhouse this morning, Ruth and I did, and we talked about just how experiences really shape our decision-making as we go along. Because the more experiences we have under our belt, the more comfortable we are. And chances are with experience, we've run into it before. We've had to solve it before. And so we can solve it a lot faster the second, third, and fourth time around than we did the first time. And so writing is the same way. The more you write and the more you have questions and the more you overcome those questions with the right answers, then you can move a little bit faster down the road. So today we're talking about how to launch. Now, here's my story. And I know that you gals on the call have heard this story before, but over the years, I've always told Mark, when we first met, he was like, oh, well, what do you have in mind for retirement? Because of course, he had already retired by the time we met. And he says now he's never worked so hard in all his life than he did after after he retired, because we started buying rental property, for those of you that know me, and we're still rehabbing rentals. So and that's a lot of physical work. But he is a retired school teacher. And so, you know, he was when we met, we were trying to align, you know, our wishes and what our vision was for our life together. And I said, well, I want to write when I retire, and I want to be able to do that from anywhere in the world. So I've always said that. So over the years, as I was still working and he was retired, he would go, when are you going to start writing? And I'm like, I'm still working. I don't have time. You know, and a couple of years would go by and he would say, when are you going to start writing? So finally, I made the decision to retire from my corporate job. And one of the first things that I did is I started writing, but it wasn't fiction. I started writing nonfiction. I started writing, you know, and how to have passive income, and started writing courses, and started writing for the Board of Cosmetology. And then the city gave me a grant to write how to open a bed and breakfast. And so I wrote that. So anyway, I started writing, and it was okay. But my sweet spot for me is I want to write mystery novels. And so I just never had gotten around to it. You know, we've all heard that. Oh, I haven't gotten around to that yet. And so as life started unfolding, I knew that I wanted to get published, but I didn't know how. And I thought, I know I could self-publish and I could just buckle down and figure that out. You know, I could just the mechanicals of it, you know. Like what, how many pages and what format and how to upload it. And, you know, and I knew that I could do that, but again, it takes time. And as we talked about before, experience, the more you do it, the easier that becomes. I had a couple of girlfriends that tried to publish and they're like, oh, that was the worst thing I ever did. I couldn't get the page numbers right. And I struggled, and then my cover didn't fit. And it was all the technical stuff of self-publishing. And they're like, just pay somebody to do that. You know, once you write something, just pay somebody to do all that technical stuff. Well, I'm a firm believer that that's good on one hand, but on the other hand, if you're paying someone, anytime you want to change something, you have to wait for them to have time. You have to wait for them to see your vision, and hopefully they will make it look like you wanted it to look, or you could just figure it out yourself and do it on your own and upload it. And then if you wanted to fix something or tweak something, you have not only the power to do it, but you then have the knowledge to do it. But it does take an attitude of looking yourself in the eye in the mirror and saying, I am smart enough to figure it out. I am smart enough to figure this out. So as time went on, we all meet folks that they come into our lives, and I don't believe by happenstance. I believe that folks come into our lives for a reason. And I think everything is kind of divinely inspired at some level. And so I met this most amazing gal, and she said, I have to back up and say this first. And Debbie, you'll remember this. When I first met Carrie Oberbrunner, I went because there was an ad on Facebook that said how to turn raving fans into clients or something to that effect. It was a business class. And I showed up and found out the guy was a publisher. And I'm like, what? I remember texting Mark going, I went to this business meeting this morning and the guy is actually a publisher. And Mark is like, yeah, uh-huh. He goes, you're in the right place. Because I'd been telling him I wanted to write, you know. So that in itself was kind of an aha moment for me. So then I met this other gal, and she was not a publisher. She was all about public speaking. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to be a public speaker. Oh, because I don't want to have to travel around the country and live out of a suitcase. And, you know, it wasn't in my vision for what I wanted for my retirement. I wanted something that I could do that would generate finances, but that I could do it from anywhere in the world, which meant for me somewhat like this, it either have to be on Zoom or something online. And so I didn't want to physically have to do speaking gigs where I had to show up and, you know, and call the hotel desk to iron my blouse, you know, because I had to be on stage. Because again, for those of you that have ever had that type of a lifestyle, it sounds fun and exciting, but after a while, it does become a job. And it's not as fun and as exciting as you might think. A little bit of it is great. And this is just my opinion. A little bit of it is great. But I think if you were doing it day in and day out and week after month after year, that after a while, you would start to look forward to when that could come to a close, or that you could lighten up on that schedule. And so anyway, all of a sudden, this gal who was all into speaking, she said, I'm going to hold hands with a publisher and we're going to do a collaborative book effort. And I was like, what? How did I end up here again? Back to writing again, you know? So I think when we put out there, you know, what we want our lives to be, I do think that the universe steps up and answers that for us. And so I'm like, okay, well, here I am again, back with the publisher. And so she said, here's the deal. She said, we're going to have somewhere between 15 and 20 authors. All of you are just going to write a chapter. And so I do have to stop and say this. With the first guy who was a publisher, he had a course, and you could take his course, and it taught you how to figure out how to write, how to get your ISBN number, how to format, how to come up with your book cover, how to do all of this. And so I thought, okay, I've got to have time. And I was still working full time. So I thought, I don't know if I have time. If I spend that money, which the money was not totally the issue, but if I spend that money, am I going to have the time to devote to really, I guess I'll say it this way, to really get my money's worth? Am I going to be able to really dedicate the time I need to get through that program and actually publish a book? So that was always in the back of my mind, that I always have that option. I can always, you know, buy his course and publish a book. But then when I met the gal who was holding hands with the publisher that was going to do the collaborative book effort, she said, no. She said, you submit your chapter. She goes, I will do the formatting. I will do the book cover. I will do the ISBN number. I will do the uploading. I will do all of it. And I will guarantee you that you will publish a number one bestseller. And I'm thinking, do I get the course, try to write the book, do the whole thing, or do I jump on to this collaborative book effort? And what really cinched it for me was when she said, if you will do this collaborative book effort, and she said, and you get number one Amazon status, she said, you then can advertise that number one. And she said, and you'll get an author's page on Amazon. And she said, and then if you get number one book status, which you will, she said, you can then advertise that on your author page that you're a number one Amazon bestseller. And she said, it doesn't matter how many books come after this one, you are already a number one bestseller, and you are allowed to use that little logo emblem on everything that you do. And so I really thought about it. And I sat down and I told Mark, I said, I'm going to spend the money and I'm going to do the collaborative project first. I'm not saying I'll never do the other project. I'm just saying I'm going to do this one first. And I said, because for the time constraint, all I have to do is submit my chapter and they do the rest. And the way that it becomes a number one, which was right up my alley, was the fact that all 20 authors, or 15, however many she had, she ended up with 22 on this particular effort. But all of those authors are pushing the cart in the same direction. And so it's not just you trying to market your book. You've got 22 people marketing your book. Now, for those of you that are in my Build a Better Business, you know that I talk all the time about once you know what products and services that you're bringing to the world, that you need to serve an influencer, meaning you need to find someone who has the same audience as you, find out what they're lacking, and you can fill that void. And so, for example, I came alongside the gal who actually turned me onto this cooperative book project, and she wanted to do this public speaking event, and she wanted to put on this summit, this in-person summit. And so I immediately volunteered. See, I immediately said, how can I help you? Because her audience was my audience. And I said, how can I help you? And she was like, oh, I can't believe you're willing to help me. Well, yeah. And so what happened by me showing up, and we were in Florida at the time, she's in Miami, we're in Sarasota, we drove 4 hours across the state so that I could be there early. I helped do gift bags, I helped do registration, I helped, you know, set up the tables for her little expo. I helped with all of that. And in turn, as soon as she was on stage, the first person she called up was me. And she was like, I want everybody to meet Kathy. Kathy worked behind the scenes and blah, 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 blah. So anyhow, all of a sudden, her audience knew who I was, simply because I served her. See, and I couldn't have paid for that kind of exposure, you know? So with the same thing, when it came to this collaborative effort, I was like, I've got, you know, with 22 of us, I've got 21 other authors that are bringing me to their audience. See, now I'm bringing them to my audience by having the book, but they were bringing me to their audience. And I started getting reports back on, oh my gosh, Kathy, one of the other authors, several of the other authors, they're like, I was at a dinner party the other night and finances came up and I whipped out the book and turned to your chapter because you talked about passive income. And even the publisher, she says, I was talking to my son the other night and she said, and I made him read your chapter. And so you are making a difference in the world, even if you're in a collaborative effort, but the win for you is that it puts your material in front of everyone else's audience that's in the book. And they all want to be number one, so they're all pushing forward. So one of the first things that I did, and again, of course, this publisher, she knows how to make it number one on Amazon. And so you have to, you know, have a couple of different avenues that you're marketing the book. And then you have to, of course, get so many sales and so many reviews. And it's this whole formula, which she knows. And so she just kept working with, at large, she would tell all of us, we're going to sell the digital copy before we publish an actual paper version. She said, we're going to sell the digital copy for 99 cents on Apple, because she said, anybody that has an Apple product once you have your credit card and everything in your Apple, if you have an Apple, any Apple people here, it's real easy to just hit the buy now button and it's done. You don't have to get out your wallet and put in your credit card number and, you know, all of that. You just hit, yep, I'll take it. And it's a done deal. And she said, so it's the second easiest sell next to Amazon. And with Amazon, it's the same way. Anything you want on Amazon, you just buy now and you're in, you know, because if you've got a credit card number on file, you don't have to re-enter it and add shipping and all, you're just, it's done. So she said, if we do Amazon first, then we won't get people to buy on Apple because Amazon is pretty easy. And so she said, we just launch on Apple first, because she says that way, if we can get 500 sales on Apple, she said, then the Amazon will kind of take care of itself. And all of a sudden you've got your two different lanes, because to be number one, it takes two. You can't just get all your sales on Apple or all your sales on Amazon. You have to be on two different channels. So Apple is first at 99 cents. So anyhow, with 500 and divide that by 22, we each only had to sell like 23 books. Okay. You see where I'm going with that. So if one person had to sell 500 books on Apple, it might be a little difficult. But with 22 of us selling 500 books on Apple, we each only had to sell 23 books. So what I did, I simply gifted the digital copy, and some of you may remember this, I gifted the digital copy to my mastermind members. I just gifted it. And there was my 23 copies. You see where I'm going with that. And so then when it came time for Amazon, now we had to do it again on Amazon. And if you could do it on two channels, then you would be number one. So then on Amazon, I had, of course, my academy. And one of the things when you're getting ready to launch a book, if you're going to go with a traditional publisher, one of the things that traditional publishers are asking you these days is what kind of a following do you have? And, you know, so if you haven't generated that following, sometimes it's a little hard to, you know, bring it up to speed all at once. And so I realized that within my Kathy Benner International Academy, I have 500 and some students. Now, a ton of them are just tapping into the free stuff, but I have their email addresses in there because they've had to register to get into the academy to get the free stuff. So I have quite a mailing address, you know, list of emails. And so what I did is I gifted, and here's where Amazon is the sweet spot. I gifted all 500, I think I had 576 at the time my book launched, I gifted all 576 a free book, 99 cent book through Amazon. Now, here's where the sweet spot is with Amazon. You would say, well, that Kathy, that's going to cost you $576. Well, yes, except we know that not everybody is going to click through. And Amazon says, we will wait, and only those that click through and claim their copy will we bill you for. We will not invoice you the 576. We're only going to invoice you for those that click through and claim their copy. But guess what? I only needed 23 to click through. I had 300 click through out of my 576. So my contribution to being a number one, now follow this, my contribution to being a number one bestseller was basically $300 because I gifted the book to my email list. So did all 22 authors. So we ended up number one in 13 categories. So you see where it's not a mystery on how to do this. It takes somebody, and this goes back to that experience that we were talking about. I would not have known this had I not been following what was going on with this co-op book. I wouldn't have known all of this. And, you know, I might have tried to figure it out and over time. But how many authors are out there and they never make it to number one? And they're not a bad writer. They're not a bad author. They've done all the right stuff. But look at how many publications are out there. Now, here's another point. Because there were 22 of us, and because we were a collaborative effort, we're allowed to review an author other than ourselves. Well, there were 22 of us. So we had 22 great reviews right out of the chute because each of us reviewed the other authors. And so all of a sudden we had 22 five-star reviews and we ended up number one in 13 different categories. So you see my point is, and you might say, okay, well, all of that's cheating. You know, the book just has to stand on its own and the public at large has to know that it's a great book. And well, Ruth is always mentioning a new book to me that I haven't read. I may have heard of it, but I haven't read it. I haven't reviewed it. I haven't ordered it. And because Ruth mentions it, I'll go out and say, yeah, I do want a copy of that book. And I'll get it and I'll say, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And then I'll review it. But it might have been out for 10 years. And I'm just now getting around to it, you know, because it just didn't fit into my life experiences at the time. And like I said, I think all things kind of come to us by some divine intervention. And so some of these books I wouldn't have appreciated 10 years ago that I can appreciate today. And vice versa, books that I read 10 years ago are not material to what I'm doing today. So I think it all works together. And I think there's a place for all of it. I think it's all good. But I think there's some lessons to be learned here. And one of the biggest things that I always say, and for those of you that are listening in, is that I knew that I wanted to be, there's certain things that I knew that I knew that I knew. One is that I knew I wanted to be published. I knew that I wanted to write. I knew that I didn't know all the details on how to do that, but that over time I could figure it out. I just had to start. And I knew that this train was going down the track. I knew that this girl and her publishing girlfriend were doing this collaborative book effort. And at the other end of that journey, they were going to have a number one best-selling book. The only decision I had to make was I going to get on the train when it went by? Because I knew that they were going to do it. And I knew that they were going to be a number one at the other end. And I knew there were going to be some great authors in that project. And I already had met some of the folks. They were amazing at what they do. I could really stand behind them and their stories. And so all I had to decide was I going to get on this train as it went by?
Yeah.
And submit my chapter.
Yeah.
And she said, submit your chapter. She goes, I'll make you look good and I'll make it fit the book. So she did all of the editing. So for one flat price, I got the book, the editing, the cover, the ISBN, the marketing, the number one status. I got everything for one flat price. And so was it going to pinch a little? Yeah. But I had to decide if this was right for me. Now, this may not be right for everyone. This may not be the way that you want to publish. Maybe you don't want to be in a collaborative book effort. Maybe you want more control over what's in the book. Because again, I had no control over anyone else's stories. I only could control mine, my chapter. And I knew though that I trusted, and this is where we go back to that build a better business. We talk about getting to know, like, and trust. I knew these gals. I trusted these gals. I knew that they were going to have only really decent stories in this book. I knew at the end of the day, I was going to be proud to be a part of that collaborative effort. I didn't say, oh, wonder if it's a real dud and there's somebody in there that says something that I don't agree with. Or I knew that I could trust these two gals that were putting together this book. And that's a big part of it. You have to get to know, like, and trust who you're working with. And so, Sandy, correct me if I'm wrong, but even if you're using a traditional publisher, you have to have a relationship, I think, with that publisher. It can't be just a mechanical, here's my check, make it happen. I think you have to have the same heart. You have to be going after the same end result.
Right.
Yeah. And your relationship begins with the agent, and the agent then takes your book if she, he or they believe in your story, and they're going from one publishing house to another saying, take this book on, take this book on. And then the editor of the publishing company now becomes your close friend. And there are great stories, not so great stories. People jump around, but yeah, you're right. It is. You're looking for the one who knows you, knows your work, even if they've never personally met you. So yeah, that's very possible. And it works in the literary world. I recently had a short story accepted into an anthology. So much in the same way, that anthology has 26 other writers in it. So each of those writers, and usually a literature or a short story anthology, we'll be looking for at least one major writer to have a work accepted, because that's the calling card. Like, oh, wow, John Steinbeck is in this. I'm going to get it for that reason. But there's a lot, like you said, each of those 27 of us has probably a mailing list of fans, a website. People go looking for, where is your next book coming out? Who are you? And much like that, it's going to work. And in addition, in this one, Ohio has the Ohio Narrators Association. So it's immediately going to go to audiobooks. So I think you're right. And I think that if people can handle writing a chapter or writing a short story and they do it well, that could work. That's a great, great launching pad for your launching your career, launching your writing. Yeah, definitely.
I love it. I love it. So let's go around, and anyone have any ahas so far on what we've talked about? And Ruth, I know you're already published. She's got her camera off and her microphone off, so I'm not sure if she's multitasking today, but Ruth, if you can jump on. And what are your thoughts or your aha moments today?
I don't know if I have any that are ahas. I do know that launching a book is not easy. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, and I do see the trend, you know, for the group, the anthologies, and I do see the deal where the whole big deal with launching is pretty well give away your book at first to get those ratings. You know, that's the trend that I've seen. That's there a lot. I think I do have a couple other books in my head or in my mind, heart, whatever you want to say, but I'm going at them as I have information to give out. And if they make money, that's just a bonus, because getting a book to actually make money is hard. You know, I mean, you've got to really market yourself and do it. And kudos to you, Sandy. I think you write as a profession.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And so you've got to make money with it, you know, type stuff. But you do have to, I'm speaking for myself. Can you see all the fingers going back? And I do consider myself an introvert. Mm-hmm. And so putting myself, you know, like when I launched my first book, there's lots of things I didn't do right. And I can spell some of those out, but you pretty much have to put yourself out there and be confident in what you're doing. And not, you've got to have a thick skin. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody's going to want it. Not everybody's going to, you know, and if you look and you see, oh, I thought this would sell better than it did, or, you know, something like that, you can really get down on yourself. So, you know, what Kathy was saying about doing an anthology with a group, there's definitely pluses that way.
Ruth, what was your experience when you launched your book? Because you did the whole course where you did one book, one author, you went from start to finish, you put everything together and went through the course and then put it together yourself. What were your big struggles there?
I don't even know where to start. It was a lot. I did do the program through Terry, and he was very optimistic that he had 12 new writers that had really never written before, and he thought he could get published books in 6 months. I think most of it took 2 or 3 years, and some of them never did. No, he didn't. He had 25 writers, and some of them never did finish their book.
I think, and that's too bad, because they had a dream to publish, and that's too bad that they didn't finish.
Right, right. And I don't remember how many that was, but you know, I will say I learned a lot about myself in that process. Mm. You know, it clarified for me what I believed, what I knew about myself. And my book was called Time to Fly, and it was breaking free from psych behaviors and soaring towards an all-around healthier you. And it was, in some ways, a memoir, but generally speaking, an advice book too. You know, it was the things that had kept me stuck for so many years, and then what I had learned as far as breaking through. And I still use it a lot in writing my blogs and social media and that type of stuff, because there's tons of good information in that book. And it was the launching pad for what I'm doing now as far as thriving relationships. But yes, that was a lot harder process than I ever thought it would be. But unlike you, Kathy, I always had in the back of my head that I wanted to write a book, even from a little girl. And I thought, I'll never do it. You know, that's just a dream that won't happen. But I had reached a place in my personal growth that I began to see that I did have something to give out. And this opportunity came, and I just told Tom, I'm jumping. I'm going to do it. Because I thought, this may be my only opportunity to ever write a book. And it was a good experience. I'm telling you guys the pitfalls, you know, that I ran into. But overall, I'm not sorry I did it. I should have. Well, there's lots of should haves I should have done, you know, like I said. But I should have got people around me more for the launch that knew how to do it. And I know, Debbie, you're going to be looking at this. And so feel free to pull in people and that can help you, that know what they're doing. And I almost tried almost to solo it, and that didn't work well. Of course, I'm out here in Kansas all by myself, and you guys are all in Ohio, so that, you know, there's things like that. But I should have had people more involved with me than what I did as far as the launch goes. And with that, I'll pass the microphone back to you, Kathy.
Well, I think part of it, too, is that we have to know what our strengths and weaknesses are. And right. For me, if I, you know, you do all of those personality tests and all of that stuff. And for me, it always comes out that I'm a real strong support person. And I've always said that in the perfect world, put me right behind the CEO. I'd be a great behind the scenes person. I could book all the travel and take care of all of the details and make sure that, you know, his suit was picked up from the dry cleaners and the flights were made, and I could make the CEO look really good. That's my favorite place to be. And over the years of being in business for myself, I've had to be the upfront person, and I basically had to wear all the hats, where I have to be the upfront person and the behind the scenes person. But my preference, if I could choose, would be a behind the scenes person. So when it comes to this launch, this collaborative book effort was perfect for me, because Wendy and her publisher, Patricia, was going to do all the hard lifting, and I could be that support person. I could come along and say, what do you need me to do? What is it that you're still missing that, you know, that you need some help with?
I think you froze, Kathy.
Yeah, you're frozen at my end.
Oops, sorry. Let me know when I'm back again.
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, it says that I'm going to make Sandy my co-host real quick. I didn't do that yet. So there, just in case I get bumped off, you can let me back in the room. But anyway, over the years, I know where my strong points are, and it's being that behind the scenes support person. And so this was a perfect opportunity for me, because I could be that support person, and the launch would happen with or without me, but I could support then as much as I had time for.
And I do, and I think that's great. I do think that as we grow, we get more comfortable being in the limelight, because I know you, Kathy, you and I have talked about that, where, you know, there was a time when you would have never got up and spoke in front of an audience.
Exactly.
And now you can do that. And so part of that book process, you know, even talking to people and, you know, that type of stuff, you get more comfortable with it. And so it does grow us as we do that. But I will say that launch is a major step out of an introvert's comfort zone. And if I did it today, I mean, this was 7 years ago. I don't know, sometime.
I can't believe it's been that long ago, Ruth. I remember when you launched your book.
Yeah, maybe six. It was late 2017. And, you know, I'm a different person today than I was then. And so could I do it better today? Yes. We'll see. Like I say, I've got books. There's other things I want to get done first. And I will write those books. I can guarantee you I will write those books. But whether they'll end up being ebooks or books or, you know, like paperback books or what they're going to be yet, I don't know. But I know that content has to come out of me. Doesn't it, Debbie?
Yes. Yes. What writers do is write.
Right. What writers do is right. And we can do it in a magazine, or we can do it in a blog. We can do it different ways. And then, you know, the format changes at times. But I know the content's going to come out, and then we'll see what direction we want to go with any of it.
Yep. I agree. Ruth, thank you so much for that. That was very insightful. Yes. Thank you. Debbie, how about you? What is your aha so far, and how are you doing? I know Debbie is in the middle of writing her memoirs. And so Debbie, tell us a little bit about where you are.
Well, everything you said so far, you know, a lot of it I've heard, but some of it has restuck itself to the brain. And you never realize how many times it takes to hear something before it generates. But I like what the one thing that Ruth said was that first time writers, it does not come natural. And I thought, you know, that is really true in my case. It's not natural. Yes, I can have all this things going on in my mind, but to put it on paper, it's totally different. And I'm still loving the phrase to get on the train as it's going by. I mean, you said that Friday, and it has stuck with me ever since. And in fact, I even wrote it down again. The one thing that I will say going along with writing, lots of times when you're listening to an author, they're using big words. It's something that doesn't come natural for everyone. And people like myself have gone through the period of time where they feel like they have to use big words to get their message across. And yesterday I heard something that really resonated with me and made me realize, using big words is not me. That's not me. That's not my authenticity. Is that if that's the word I want? And so in doing so, I realize that sometimes when I'm writing a chapter, I forget that that's not me. That's not my words. And when someone picks up my book and reads it, I want them to realize that it's me talking, not someone that has a vocabulary of whatever. And I have found that doing this class has taught me a lot of things. And I don't go back and change. I just rewrite. And when I rewrite, I realize this is more me. And I don't like the idea of deleting anything, because who knows? I may use that later on, and that will be my memory jogger. So I have found, I don't know when you guys find your time to write and things like that, but, and Kathy, I think you said you get up real early mm-hmm. to write. And I have to
wait for my guests to get up before I can start flipping rooms. And Mark likes to sleep in, so mornings are perfect for me.
Yes. Well, that's like it is for Rick. He gets up before I do. Oh, well, it's just the way it is. But I'm still readjusting my schedule so I can find a more comfortable time. And what I'm beginning to realize is that if I write at night, because Rick goes to bed at 8 o'clock, so
okay.
He goes to bed early and I'm still up, you know, and it's the summer, and I've just been realizing that there's nothing on TV, you know, and I've found a couple times I go to Fire Stick and watch a movie, but anyways, that's off the point.
But that's a perfect time for you.
Yeah. And that's what I'm beginning to realize. That's my time. Because when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I read in my Bible. It's me time. So it's like, okay, I have me time two times a day, morning and at night.
Good for you.
So In answering your question, I kind of gave you an overall opinion. I haven't deleted anything in my book, like I said, but I have found that over the course of time, I'm rewriting things in my terms. And I stopped thinking about somebody coming in and, I forget, that will critique it or what's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. And yeah, if they have questions, I'll just tell them like it is. You know, I'm not, if anybody's listening to this and you want to write a book, don't be fake. Don't be phony to get your message across, because you're not making any kudos for yourself. Anyways, that's enough of my take well, it from here, Kathy.
I've always said that you have to write your first draft as if no one's going to read it. Because yeah. if you keep in the back of your head, like, oh, I better not say that because Uncle Joe might not like how I worded that, or I better not say this, especially if you're writing, you know, your memoirs or your own life story. You have the tendency to think about, you know, how people will feel if they read what you've written. So I think you have to write your first draft as if no one is ever going to read it, just so you get the true, authentic story out there. And then you can go back and you can say, okay, I need to change Grandpa to, you know, because I don't want to maybe throw the family under the bus over something. So maybe I'll change Grandpa and make him, you know, the neighbor down the street or something that said these things to me and not actually my grandpa. So I think you can kind of change it from there, but I think you have to get that first draft out as if no one is going to read it so that you can get your real story on paper. So anyway, that's just my thoughts on that.
But that's a good point.
Especially if it's something that's very emotional for you to write, I think it's kind of tough to get that out there on paper, thinking that, oh my gosh, if my family finds this, they'll hate me forever. Because you have to keep in mind, this is your story, this is your version, and it may not be everybody else's version. And so I think you do have to, you know, have that in mind as you're editing later, but I don't think that can be on your mind as you're writing the first draft. So just my opinion.
Ruth,
Ruth has her hand up.
Ask your question.
I have to find my mute button on the phone. Debbie, I think I'm going back several paragraphs, but I think you're right on that you need to be you as you write. And the people that write with big words, for some audiences, that's what they need. But for the general public, they say to write at a seventh grade level, I think it is.
Oh.
And you can tell on Microsoft Word what level your grade level you're writing at. So I would not worry about using big words. I wouldn't even worry a lot about the punctuation. Some of that may get changed as you go through and stuff, but I'm thinking of, I think it's E.E. Cummings, a famous poet from, I don't remember when, and he never capitalized anything and got away with it, you know? So you do want to use your voice. Don't try to be anybody else. In fact, as you're writing, talk to your best friend. Or figure out who your avatar is that you're writing to and talk in the language they're going to understand. If you need somebody, grab Kathy or I. You know, have Kathy in your head or have me in your head and say, you know, I'm just talking to these people I know really well and this is what I want to tell them. And, you know, Kathy brought up a good point too. Don't be an editor in your first draft.
Yeah,
just write, because they're saying those are two separate sides of the brain. And if you try to do both at the same time, you're going to make a mess of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that may be too blunt, but yeah. And with that, I'll pass it back.
Well,
that's great stuff.
Let me just say one thing. I can relate to what you're saying about talking to my avatar. Over the weekend, I finally found the pictures that I had taken when I went back to my hometown. The picture of my house where I grew up. And the minute I saw that picture, I focused on my bedroom window, which is very obvious. And it, all of a sudden, I felt like I could hear my inner voice talking to her. And we've talked about this before. And it's quite gratifying when you see something like that and you're able to immediately flash back to that point and realize where you were then and where you are now. And it's just something that's very powerful. And when you start having this, then people grab a hold of it and will become drawn in, which is what I want to do. So, Kathy, Sandy still has to talk.
No, these are all great points. Yeah.
I gotta say something else.
Okay.
From what Debbie said, I can't keep it quiet. So you guys have to just give me time to talk. Debbie, what you just said was so awesome. And it's sort of like when you talked, I don't remember when it was, but it was something we were on when you talked about canning tomatoes with your mom and listening to the pops.
Oh, yeah.
That story that you just told us there drew us in. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm wondering if you can't even bring that into your book somehow and say how it, you know, take it to this picture and how you were talking to your younger self, because that's how a lot of people say it, whatever word means to them, you know, and say this is Debbie Marks, as however old you are or however you want to say that, talking to the Debbie Marks that wasn't Debbie Marks at that name at that point, because she was a 13-year-old girl, and I want to tell her what I've learned.
Debbie and I've had the conversation about her actually using the picture of the window as her cover.
Yeah, yeah. But I think if you would bring it in as that I'm talking to that little girl that got lost all those years. And if anything I say helps you, then I've done my job. Then my book has had influence. You know, something along that line. The other thing I want to say, and then I'm going to pass it to somebody else, but that is, I don't know if you would relax in front of a recorder if you knew it was on, but you talk so good, so well with these stories when you're on these Zoom calls, but I don't think you are focusing in that you're being recorded. But, you know, Kathy brought up sometime about how you can speak and then Google will change it and write it for you.
Right.
I want you to try that.
Okay.
You know, because I think your writing will go so much faster if you can talk at first.
Mm. Good point.
Okay. I'm done.
No, that's a great, I love talking.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, I love talking into Google Docs and then letting it type it, and then all I have to do sit down later and I can edit, because it, like you said before, I'm now not in the writing mode, I'm in the editing mode, but the story is already there on paper, and it does make your writing go a lot faster, Debbie.
Yeah,
I think you're right. And again, how many times have I heard that said, you know, talk into the microphone. So yeah, I'm going to give that a try. And you're right.
Are you writing on paper with pen and pencil, or are you on a computer screen?
I'm on a computer screen.
Okay. I have listened to many authors say they never delete anything. What they do is they will highlight it and stick it in another folder or file and then come back to it. Or in the end, it might even be another story started or another chapter, another book. And I do the same. If it's a short story, I will just pick it up and move it to the very bottom, spaces below wherever the end will be, and see when I'm all done, and even then I don't throw it away. I'll put it all in a folder, what I don't use. But yeah, no, I think you're right on with, you know, don't throw it away. But do be careful. There are those people who spend their lives re-editing and not writing new stuff. And it's easy to do. But what's nice is you're already seeing it the way you want it to go out to the public. So that's great.
Yeah. Thanks. I agree.
I think we all find our own style on how we like to write and how we like to save this information. And I think for some of us that are kind of new, I think we're still, we're learning to walk. I think we're still learning how we want to manage the writing. And I think that's a big piece of writing, is learning the systems that we're going to put into place that work for us. And oh, yeah. Once we have some of those systems in place on what works, then it's a little easier to relax into that system, because you know that you've saved all those notes, or you know, however you decide you want to save things. So I'm not saying that I'll never use a writer's program, a writing program. There's some wonderful ones out there. And if I decide that I'm going to go to the place where I'm going to start writing and try to monetize the writing in a way that I'm, you know, like the authors that are doing, you know, 2 books a year or whatever, I don't know that I'll ever get to that place. I'm not saying that I won't, but that would be, I would love that. I would love to be able to just publish a couple of mystery novels a year and just keep publishing. Mm-hmm. So kind of, and mine is kind of like a Hallmark movie bumps into Murder, She Wrote. It's kind of on that level. It's kind of like a light romance, light murder, and you know, or mystery novel. And so I would love to just do a couple of those a year. Yeah. Debbie.
Sandy, you asked me if I'm writing or typing. A year ago, I realized doing it on my laptop was taking up too much room. So I was thinking about buying a separate small laptop, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that I had my old computer, old, to, you know. So I had my husband take everything off except Word. Good. And I don't worry about connecting it to the internet.
Yeah.
I have that. And if there's something that I want to put, or, you know, like critique or something on my computer, I put it on a flash drive and then put it over on that. And
yeah,
what's amazing is that really works, because then I don't have to worry about anything. When I'm done, I just close it and it's right there.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, and I find that if I'm doing too much on my computer typing a story and I'm getting stuck, I start seeing myself editing. Like, it's so easy to capitalize that word, add that comma, do some grammatical thingamabob. Then I'll stop and I'll pick up a pen and paper and I'll work through that scene, because I'm very, very, very comfortable. I'm secretary of every group I've ever come up with, because I'm really good at listening and writing at the same time. So if I'm listening to my own voice, you know, in my head and my story, and I'm being stilted by my computer, then it's time to get something out on paper till I feel like, okay, I got it now. I can go back. But yeah, there is no right or wrong way of really doing it. And you're finding your way. And I also like the word launch, because as we've talked here, launch is more than just getting your book out. You're launching yourself as an author. Mm-hmm. And for better or for worse, personalities really sell a book too. How many of us, there was this great writer, I was at a writer's convention this weekend, and a great writer was there, one of my favorites. And oh my gosh, I was so glad that he was nice. Because, you know, you get some of the, what if you meet your favorite celebrity and they're a snot, you know? So hide that part, delete it, rewrite it, I don't know. But, you know, you're launching yourself in this day and age. You're launching yourself. I often wonder how some of these classic authors would have fared in our world today if we knew who they were. And well, we read about them sometimes in history books, sort of. But yeah, launching is a broad word, and all of it is very important to just getting the public to read your stories. So, it can be overwhelming.
I love it. This has been a great conversation. I want to just say thanks for everybody that tapped in today to this mastermind. This has been good. I hope we've inspired you to continue on and get ready to launch. And so, Sandy, thank you so much for always coming on and being my co-host. And Ruth, thanks for tapping in today. We loved your insight and the fact that you're already published. You're a little bit ahead of me. So thank you for your insight today. And Debbie, kudos to you. I'm so excited to see where your book is going to take you. I can see you growing. You are so much more comfortable behind the microphone on just winging it, as you like to say. You're doing so well at that. really. I mean, I've seen you grow so much just in the last few months.
Thank you. It looks
good on you.
Last Friday was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. She did a whole podcast with no notes. She just opened up and did the podcast. It was wonderful. So Abby, just say that it does not go unnoticed that you're really moving along in that area. So good for you. Because it'll take you far in all of whatever you do with your business. However you want, it'll be to your benefit. So good job. Any last comments from anyone before we go today? This has been great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for putting it together, Kathy.
One quick one for Debbie. You'll have to use your new computer if you use that Google Drive or, you know, where it writes it for you, because you have to have internet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And then you could move it over. But yeah, you would have to use your one with internet.
Okay. Yes, that's true. That's true.
And the only other thing I'd like to say too is have a backup somewhere in case that older computer crashes on you. You don't want to lose all your work.
Right here.
Okay.
External drive.
Good. You've got that covered. Yep. I can't tell you the number of authors that have been crying because their computer crashed and they lost their work they'd been doing. So yep, you always want to have a backup of the backup. I love it. All right, ladies. Thank you so much for being on today. We'll see everybody soon.
Yep.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.